Good morning. I tried out the joke I was thinking about for this morning on my wife yesterday, and judging by her reaction, I'm not going to tell it. I am a fairly extroverted person. You probably don't need to be told that. I am the kind of person who's pretty outgoing in public. When I was a kid, my mom always said I was a ham. I was, you know, always just doing whatever in front of the whole family. And when I was in high school, I was in one play and I directed the other one. When I was in college, I was in two different plays. When I was actually in between the Army and college, I was a I was the guy who takes, I was the tour guide on tours. If you've ever been up to Sault Ste. Marie, and if you've seen the boats that go through the locks, the tour boats there, I was a tour guide on that and gave a 3-hour tour, kind of like Gilligan. No comparison there, but you know. So I'm kind of an outgoing type of person. I don't mind being in front of people. I get up here every week and I do something that a lot of people would consider a fate worse than an IRS audit. I'm not making that up. A surprising number of people have said in surveys that they would rather go through an IRS audit than have to do public speaking. Just this morning, Donald was saying, I don't know. I've got to get up front. He says, I'm kind of afraid of public speaking. I said, well, that's okay. I'm talking about that in the sermon. Most of the time, doing this doesn't bother me at all. When I was new in ministry, when I hadn't preached much, it used to make me pretty nervous until I would get up here and get going. And then once I got into it, I'd be all right. You know, I actually do better with a bigger group. If it's a really small group, that makes me more nervous. I'd rather preach in front of 300 than in front of 30. For some reason, the small group when I'm preaching, it just, that kind of makes me a little bit nervous. And I don't do really well in that. But I am not married to someone, however, who is an extrovert. My beautiful wife, she does not share my thoughts on that sort of thing. She is an introvert. While she's far more comfortable being around or even in front of people than she was 20 years ago, she is still, for the most part, pretty introverted. In fact, she isn't overly fond of even being the subject of sermon illustrations. But she's kind of gotten used to that. She's had to. However, I will point out that I still get her permission anytime I'm going to use her as an illustration. And I asked her on Thursday if I could do this. She doesn't like big crowds. She's even a bit nervous if we have strangers over to the house. But she's pretty comfortable if it's people that we know fairly well, at least for the most part. She should be congratulated, however, as she has been asked to do public speaking on, I don't know, 4 or 5 different occasions. And aside from it making her feel like she's going to throw up, she does pretty well. Her favorite idea of how to spend time is to be alone, or with 1 or 2, maybe 3 people that she's quite close with. She could be at home or even out for a walk, but it needs to be away from a big group of people in order for her to feel relaxed and to be able to get in some rest and relaxation from it. When we go to the beach, which to us, the beach is the best place on earth. If I have my druthers where I want to go, and Kathy is the same way, if you say, where would you like to spend some time? The answer is the beach. However, when we go to the beach, we go out, you know, on the public access, and then we immediately hang left and go down like 0.5 mile to get away from the crowds, because going to the beach is not relaxing if there's a stranger 18 inches over to your right and another one 20 inches over to your left. Kathy doesn't like that very well. That doesn't bother me that much. I'm going into the water anyway. But she doesn't like that. So we go off where we can have some space. But here's something that may surprise you. Even people who are pretty well extroverted, like me, really like to get away from people at times as well. There is a big myth, which I think was started by introverts because they're jealous of us. But there is a myth that extroverts get energy from being around crowds and being the center of attention. No, we really don't. We like crowds, we like the center of attention, but it's exhausting. Nearly every preacher that I know wants nothing more from a Sunday afternoon than a quiet house and a couch on which to nap. Because being up here and preaching is exhausting. Kathy has said to me, wait a minute, you don't get energy from being out and among people? You're always so animated and you're so up about it. I said, I enjoy it, but that doesn't mean it gives me energy. It wears me out. And she couldn't figure that out. And I said, it's like a basketball player who's good at basketball. They like to do it, but it doesn't give them energy. At the end of the game, they're tired. Extroverts, we get worn out from people, just like introverts. But you introverts didn't know that. You didn't think that, did you? When I am on my game for my sermon, and specifically, When there's good attendance and people are paying attention and I think I'm doing pretty well, I like it. But to be completely frank, when I leave here, I'm done in. I am whooped. The other thing people may not understand is that just like everyone else, we are not always upbeat. I was at a Thanksgiving dinner at my aunt's house. And we're all talking, and I was kind of cutting it up and had people laughing, and things were going pretty well. And my aunt said something which caught me by surprise. She said, you're always having so much energy and excitement. Don't you ever get worn out or get depressed? I don't know why, but this question genuinely shocked me. I couldn't comprehend how she would even need to ask a question like that. Of course I do. Of course, everyone does. It took me a while to realize why she felt the need to ask that. She never sees it. All she ever sees from me is upbeat and cutting it up and having a good time. That's something which people like me express when we're in front of people. But when we're by ourselves or with close friends or immediate family, after the curtains close, so to speak, that's when you can see exhaustion. But everyone feels this way. Everyone. There has not been a soul who walked the earth who has not felt the pressing, suffocating need to go and be alone for a time. Not even Jesus. He was God, yes, but he was also human. He went through everything that you and I do. Sometimes worse than you and I could possibly imagine. In Matthew chapter 14, verses 13 through 21, John the Baptist had just been executed for telling people what they needed to hear, but they didn't want to hear. Word of this has just reached Jesus. It also happens to coincide with some other events that have been going on in the ministry of him and the other apostles. And we read this. This is right after it talks about John the Baptist being executed. It says, now, when Jesus heard this, he withdrew from there in a boat to a desolate place by himself. But when the crowds heard it, they followed him on foot from the towns. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them and healed their sick. Now, when it was evening, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a desolate place, and the day is now over. Send the crowds away to go into the villages and buy food for themselves." But Jesus said, "They need not go away. You give them something to eat." They said to him, "We have only 5 loaves here and 2 fish. And he said, "Bring them here to me." Then he ordered the crowds to sit down on the grass, and taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and said a blessing. Then he broke the loaves and gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the crowds. And they all ate and were satisfied. And they took up 12 baskets full of the broken pieces left over. And those who ate were about 5,000 men besides women and children. It was not uncommon for Jesus to withdraw from the crowds. There were instances when the crowds had a different mind as to what they wanted than what he wanted. But there were also times when Jesus needed, it seems, just to get away for a bit. Other times, Jesus made tactical withdrawals due to opposition growing against him by the political leaders and religious leaders. In Luke chapter 4, verse 42, Jesus had been healing and casting out demons, something probably physically demanding, if not emotionally draining. But he was surrounded by crowds who wanted even more from him. It says, "And when it was day, he departed and went to a desolate place. And the people sought him and came to him and would have kept him from leaving them." In the main passage for today, the incident of feeding the 5,000, Jesus had a few reasons why he had withdrawn. We read from Mark chapter 6, verse 7, it says, "And he called the 12 and began to send them out 2 by 2 and gave them authority over the unclean spirits." At this point, he is just sending out all of his disciples to go out throughout the cities and preach and teach and do miracles. When we get to the point of Jesus feeding the 5,000, Mark tells us that they had just gotten back. The 12 had been out on a long missionary trip and they had just come back. Jesus probably learned of John's execution from them when they came back. To top that off, Jesus was at the height of his popularity, and he couldn't get a moment to himself. Mark chapter 6, verses 30 through 32 says, "The apostles returned to Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. And he said to them, 'Come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest a while.' For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in the boat to a desolate place by themselves." This was intended to be truly a retreat, a spiritual withdrawal, so that they could get some rest. Get some emotional, physical, and spiritual rest. And we see how well that turned out for them. They headed off. They're like, "Okay, we're going to leave the crowds. We're going to head out there, and we're going to go just the group of us and spend some downtime." And they didn't get any downtime. Not 1 minute. Some commentaries, they try to make it out that the only reason that Jesus was withdrawing was to get out of the reach of Herod. Was he going away from Herod? Maybe. I mean, Herod had just killed John because John was speaking against him, and maybe Herod was going to try and wipe out everybody who was speaking against him. And that Jesus didn't want to risk his time coming too soon. But when you look at all the versions of that passage, you put them all together, we can see that if withdrawing to get away from Herod was a reason, which it very well may have been, it was only a part of it. Now, as we read this, we see that they didn't get any rest. In fact, they got the exact opposite of what they had gone away for. They wanted to rejuvenate from the pouring out of themselves so much, and they wanted some anonymity, and they didn't get any of that. Those of you who are introverts, when you read this passage, you probably feel your fingernails digging into your palms because you probably experienced that, where you're done, you're tired, you're worn out, and you're like, I am going away and I'm going to spend some time by myself. And then some annoying extrovert says, oh, I'm glad I caught you alone. I wanted to ask you something. When Jesus gets to this desolate place, he finds it to be full of needy people. But the funny thing is that he's on a boat. He's heading there. The lake isn't that big. He can see that the crowds have circled around. And he doesn't say, guys, the crowd has followed us around. Hard to starboard. Let's head off that way. No, he sees them and he knows that they have a need. And so he just goes right into them anyway. He heads right at them. Then he even provides for their needs. He heals their sick. He takes care of them. And now that I've said that, don't think that I'm saying that a good Christian will always put other people's needs above their own. Other people will always have needs and wants. And I am not saying that a good Christian has to always put other people first. I have personally seen many, not a few, many preachers burn themselves out, not to mention the unrepairable damage that they have done to their families because they couldn't say no. Jesus saw their need and he gauged it to be greater than his own at that moment. And so he gave from his compassion. But it was only for that moment. It would soon change, and so would his behavior. After the miraculous feeding, Jesus sees something change, and he changes his actions accordingly. Mark chapter 6, verses 45 through 46 says, immediately he made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side, to Bethsaida, while he dismissed the crowd. And after he had taken leave of them, he went up on the mountain to pray. And John adds in John chapter 6, verses 14 and 15, when the people saw the sign that he had done, the feeding, the miraculous feeding, they said, this is indeed the prophet who is to come into the world. Perceiving that they were about to come and take him by force to make him king, Jesus withdrew again to the mountain by himself. I will also point out, they had headed out to go on a retreat to get away from people, to get some downtime, and that didn't happen. Jesus feeds the 5,000. They then leave. Jesus walks on the water. They cross. They go over to the other side. The crowds follow them back over there. But this time, Jesus says, you're only here for the food. And he basically ticks off 5,000 people and they leave. Right after this, it says in one of the Gospels that Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre or Tyre, I don't know how that's pronounced, and Sidon. I don't know if you ever looked it up on a map, but Tyre and Sidon, they're not even in Israel. They're up by Lebanon. Jesus is like, all right, we tried this once and it didn't work out. We are leaving, guys. We are getting out of town. In fact, they're getting out of the country. They left and went up to Tyre and Sidon to get some withdrawal and rest. And you know what? They even had people up there going, hey, aren't you that Messiah guy? But Jesus takes some time down. I will be honest. I feel like this sometimes. When I get worn out, I want a beach and nobody to bother me. And sometimes I will even complain about it a little. This isn't what Jesus did. This wasn't his method. He didn't say, man, those crowds, they're driving me nuts with all this. I need this and I want that. He didn't say, boy, I'm just going to go get a day off. These guys can just, they can go do something else because I'm over it. When Jesus withdrew, he did something, and it would behoove us all to take note. Luke chapter 5, verses 15 and 16. But now, even more, the report about him went abroad, and great crowds gathered to hear him, and he healed, and to be healed of their infirmities. But he would withdraw to desolate places and pray. When Jesus needed strength, he would go off by himself, yes, but he would do so in prayer. The greater his need, the greater his prayer. Luke chapter 22, verses 40 through 43 says, and when they came to the place, he said to them, pray that you may not enter into temptation. And he withdrew from them about a stone's throw and knelt down and prayed, saying, Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. And there appeared to him an angel from heaven strengthening him. At times in my ministry, people have come to me and told me that they were going through really hard times, that they were struggling emotionally and spiritually, that they were really down, that they were in one of those valleys. And if you've been around more than, oh, say, 10 years, you've been in one of those valleys. And they say, oh, this is going on in my life, and this is going on, and this is going on. And they come to me for counseling. And I've learned the hard way. It took me a while to get this. But I've learned that the first thing that I do with them is not dwell on what's got them down, because that only brings them down further. The first thing that I do when people have come to me and talked to me about the issues in their life is I ask them a question. How's your prayer life? Now that may seem like a strange thing to say, but it's not. Because let me ask you something. In 21 years of ministry, when people have come to me, and they're in a down part of their life, they're really struggling, they're emotionally drained, they're spiritually drained, and I ask them, how's your prayer life? Guess how many of them have said, it is great. I spend 20 minutes every day talking to the Lord. That's happened maybe twice. In every other instance, I don't get an answer. Not for the first few seconds. When I say, how's your prayer life, do you know what I get? That's exactly what Satan wants. When you are down, he wants to separate you from God, and that's the exact opposite of what you need. Now that sounds like, well, that's not very, very helpful, Kevin. Somebody comes to you pouring their heart out, telling you everything that's going wrong in their lives, and you just tell them, well, are you praying good? But it is important. It's very important. It's important because there's the connection with God in prayer, but it's also important because when we turn to the Lord in prayer in those desolate times in our life, we're focusing our attention not on our problems, problems, but on the one who can solve our problems. And once we get our minds set right, then it's a lot easier to address those problems. Which, by the way, I do. When they've come to me after I ask them how their prayer life is, and then we talk a little bit further, then we go into some of the things and I try to offer some helpful advice. I try to offer some spiritual guidance in that. But it is still something that I need to tell other people. And guess what? It's still something I need to tell me. Isaiah chapter 51, verse 3. For the Lord comforts Zion. He comforts all her waste places and makes her wilderness like Eden, her desert like the garden of the Lord. Joy and gladness will be found in her, thanksgiving and the voice of song. Matthew Henry, a great preacher from the early 1700s in England, he wrote this: For what are the compassions of the most merciful men compared with the tender mercies of God in Christ? The apostles, worn out as they were, they did have a genuine concern for the crowd at the feeding of the 5,000. They wanted to remedy the situation. But they were only willing to rely on their own intellect and abilities and what that would tell them to do. Instead of asking Jesus what they should do in the situation, do you know what they did? They thought to tell the Lord of the universe how to fix the problem with their ideas. They actually told Jesus, hey, there's a problem. We know how to fix it. Send them away so that they can go take care of themselves. And Jesus says, guys, I think maybe the ideas should be from me. And instead of telling me what to do, maybe you should ask me what you should. Jesus, tired as he was, knew that God the Father would work through him to care for them. And you know what he did? He prayed. I'm not saying that God is going to miraculously feed you with some miracle bread. But I am going to tell you that man does not live on bread alone. There are times when we are tired. There are times when we are worn. There are times when we don't think we have anything left. And sometimes that's right when somebody comes into our life who needs help from us. And we're going, I don't even have anything left for me, much less enough left to help you. But when we're doing that, we're being the apostles. We're saying, hey, send them away to go buy some bread. And Jesus says, there's an infinite source. We need to depend on him to fill us so that we can help fill others. But if we're not filling ourselves up by being with the Lord in prayer, there's not going to be anything left to help pass on. And sometimes, folks, we're human and we get physically, emotionally drained. And there is time for us to simply say, it's time to retire. It's time to step away. It's time to go and spend some time not complaining about how much people drain you, but spend some time in prayer with the Lord, asking him to fill us. That is the only way I know out of that. Because everything else is just a cycle that's not going to be helpful. Jesus said, guys, time to go. And then when he got there, there was still a need. And while the need was greater than his need, he, through God, filled it. But only through God. And then he relied on God to take care of himself and the apostles and the people around him. If we're not doing that, you'll be drained. Do you know what the average career span expectancy of a college graduate preaching minister is? 5 years. Five. Do you know why? Because they're getting drained. Because they're unable to say things to people around them and not willing to say enough to the Lord above them in order to fix that situation. I'm not saying it's their fault. I'm not saying anything like that. But I'm saying the key, the only key, the only solution is prayer. Going to the Lord and asking Him to fill us. You will be, if you're not right now in a desolate place, you will be at some point in the not too distant future. And the only answer, the key that I could give you right now, I have to give it to myself. Sometimes my wife has to say it to me because I'll be getting, you know, where nobody wants to be around me because I don't want to be around people. And she'll be like, are you praying about it? And guess what? At that exact moment, do you think that's what I want to hear? But it is the answer. And it is the only answer I can give other than the plain Jane stuff that anybody on the street could tell you. Well, are you doing this? Are you taking your vitamins? Are you sleeping enough? Pray. When you get done praying, pray. And when you get done praying, pray some more. Ask God to fill you. He will not leave you empty.